This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Everything that Tom, Richard and myself have been looking at on a Tuesday morning, the 12th of March. That includes the gold market for jewellery more than futures or gold bars because record high prices, well, we wanted to know if they were having an impact on the gold souk. Chandu Saroya is managing director, not just of Saroya Jewellers, but he's also the vice chairman of Dubai Gold and Jewellery Group, the perfect person to put that question to. We've also been looking at property this morning. A new report coming out from Property Monitor suggests that whilst volumes are rising, price appreciation might be slowing. Zahan Jahinki is the chief number cruncher for Property Monitor and Cavendish Maxwell. And we've been having a look at the future of crypto as Bitcoin hits yet another record high, passing $72,000. Ronit Ghosh is the global head of the future of finance for the bank Citi. One of the main business headlines for us this morning is Abu Dhabi investing 66 billion dirhams in infrastructure, ranging from housing to cycle tracks.
That is a whole bunch of stuff in Abu Dhabi. And it just struck me that they're very different economies. So you've got real old economy Abu Dhabi stuff, bricks and mortar. We're going to build a bridge. We're going to build a park. We're going to build lots of buildings. But then also this new, very futuristic AI initiative. They've created an organization called MGX, which is driving AI. Now, that's not new in Abu Dhabi, but you've got Mubadala on the one hand and G42 in the other coming together, and this new venture is going to help drive this. So it's those two things in tandem that I thought were interesting on the same day. So I've been speaking to Dan Richards about it. He's an economist at Emirates NBD, and said, Dan, are these significant new investments, or is it just kind of repackaging stuff that was already happening? And if it is new investments, where does it fit within Abu Dhabi's economic strategy, which they call, like many people, Vision 2030. Here's Dan.
Abu Dhabi has announced two sizable new investments, which on the face of it couldn't really be more different. So one is to develop a new AI investment vehicle, and this will help the UAE to capture and capitalise on the rapid growth of a sector that we've already seen and that we'd expect to see continue over coming years. And the other investment announced by Abu Dhabi is a large investment into infrastructure projects, including parks, cycle tracks and housing developments. Actually, though, I would say that these two investments really go hand in hand with the plans to develop the Emirate and the UAE more broadly. Targeted investment into growth areas is increasingly being paired with strategies such as these to ensure that the quality of life here remains just as good even as the economy grows. And with the UAE getting busier and busier, strategies such as these will become ever more important.
Dan Richards of Emirates NBD. I mean, it's a lot of this. When I saw this, these two stories, I thought, OK, this is a big announcement. How much of this is new money? G42 is already doing AI stuff, as is Mubadala. We've got this new entity, MGX, to oversee it. But we've seen quite a lot of this shuffling in Abu Dhabi, haven't we? Oh, portfolio of property moves from one fund to another fund, and it's not necessarily new money. Same with the infrastructure investments. How much of this was already on the books anyway? Is it really 66 billion dirhams worth of new money? That's not a criticism. It's just we have to temper our excitement a little bit about, you know, wow, 66 billion dirham boost to GDP in Abu Dhabi. It's not quite, I don't think, that cut and dry, but no question at all. Abu Dhabi is, it's not only got the strategy, Vision 2030, from McKinsey or Boston Consulting Group or whoever did it. That a lot of cities, countries have those strategy documents. Abu Dhabi is following through and implementing.
We've got Bitcoin hitting yet another high.
$72,000. It's just off those highs at the moment, just below $72,000. Ethereum above $4,000 this morning. Certainly for the time being, the cryptocurrency rally shows no signs of losing momentum.
We've spoken to a man who's written a book about it.
We have indeed, yes. Ronit Ghosh is the global head of the Future of Finance think tank within Citigroup. So it's within the bank itself. And he's written a book called Future Money, looking at these things. And we asked him, with Bitcoin hitting a series of highs, is this the future of money? Is it here to stay? Or is it just one of those short-term bubbles, and in 10 years' time we'll look back and go, ha, 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 I remember when Bitcoin was at $72,000, it was completely worthless. Or we'll be looking back in 10 years' time going, Bitcoin's at $700,000. Remember, it was just $72,000. Why didn't we buy it? Here are the thoughts of the author of that book, Ronit Ghosh.
It depends on where you live. I mean, we're obviously doing this in Dubai. Our currency here is linked to the dollar. If you're in the dollar block or the Swiss franc, you've got a pretty strong currency. Yes, it does you do lose value from inflation. Your purchasing power goes down, but it's a relatively stable unit of account and a means of payment. And most importantly, we all agree on what it's worth. But there's like 70, 80% of the world who don't live in strong currency zones. So if you're living in Lebanon or Egypt or Nigeria, or even places like India, you often think in dollars. And the reason you think in dollars or euros is because your home currency isn't particularly strong. So there's a role for Bitcoin, there's a role for cryptocurrencies. I don't think one replaces the other.
Ronit Ghosh there, author of Future Money. Full interview available on the Bite Size Business Breakfast podcast. We're going to get him in, actually, around the middle of April to have a slightly longer discussion about this. He says there's a really big crypto event happening in Dubai just after Ramadan, and the great and the good are being lined up to be here. We'll see if that happens. Every conference organizer says, the great and the good are coming to my event, but we'll see who actually turns up. But it could be a biggie, and time for a deeper dive on this issue.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
All right, following up on that top story this morning, Dubai property sales setting a new February record on top of last year's February record, on top of last month's January record for volumes. We are joined by the man who writes the report, crunches all the numbers. Jean Jahinki is the COO of Property Monitor. He's also the Director of Market Intelligence and Research for Cavendish Maxwell. Jean, it's lovely to see you. Good morning.
Likewise. Morning, Ramadan Kareem.
Ramadan Kareem, nice cardigan.
Thank you.
Rich and I have already had a discussion about your sartorial style this morning. Let's, though, have a look at your numbers. So, new volume record for February, but you described the price appreciation that we've seen as moderate. What does that tell us?
Yeah, so price appreciation has been trending down. We've had nice, steady growth last year, but we had 16.4% growth throughout the year. That's huge, right? Really big numbers, something that is not sustainable long term. So we opened the year in January with a small increase of under 0.2%, last month at 0.8. So we're just over 1% month on yearly price appreciation. Our forecast is to see between 5 to 8, so it sits right in between that forecast, right? So we're trending right now to see 6% year. But the volume of sales is going hell for leather. Right? If I didn't come on the show saying there was yet another record in Dubai, it would be odd. February was up, record month. About 12,000 transactions. Last year's February was also a record February, at about 9,000. If we went back a year further, it was 6,000. So we've seen huge growth over those last couple of years. February is typically one of the busier months of the year as things start to ramp up. But specifically, we're just seeing transactions well over 10,000 every month. These are big numbers. If we went back pre-pandemic, we're looking at 2,500, 3,000 transactions a month.
Thank you for that comparison, actually. That is useful. So if you were to spin a narrative around the increasing volumes but the modest price appreciation, what would you tell me was actually happening on the ground?
So it's a tale of two markets, right? This is always looking at that existing home, so your ready completed market and the off-plan market. You've heard me time and time again say the recovery of this market started with stuff that was completed, ready to move in, big outdoor spaces. They rapidly appreciated. They have, for the most part, tapered off, topped out. Right, so we're not seeing as aggressive gains there. The off-plan market came in and came in with competitive prices, almost to undercut some of that ready market in the beginning. Now we've seen some of that taper off as well, but keep growing. So you've got a lot of new launches coming on right now. So there's not as aggressive price appreciation in those because they want to stay competitive, right? Last year, we saw almost a launch a day. This year, we haven't finished the February numbers because there were so many. It's more than a launch every day, right? So things are going very, very strong in the off-plan launch market. We're going to see a significant amount of new launches this year. We're already seeing probably about 25,000 units come to market in just 2 months alone.
And I know that you have been digging into the off-plan market. We've had some discrepancies in the numbers before. So you're doing a bit of extra maths around that. What have you found for February?
So look, the data's caught up, right? So we're looking at a good position. We're not having to be as looking back each month with it. The number of completed property transactions, existing homes, has stayed pretty flat. throughout the last year. You're seeing about 5,000 trade a month. Off plans where you're seeing those gains come in, and it's really tied to when those launches are happening. You have a launch, and then you'll see over the next 3 months, most of that sales come through. We're seeing that number creep up month after month after month. The percentage of market share is now shifted back into the dominance of off-plan, and it's going to be there for the considerable future.
One of the interesting things in this report for me, you say with the off-plan property that's starting to mature, to hit the point that you could sell it if you wanted to, we're not seeing a huge amount of flipping.
We're not, and thankfully, and we don't want to, those off-plan resales or those flippings, which can sometimes be speculative activity, most of those sales are still within 12 months of handover. So it's someone that's had that property, they've purchased it, they've probably got 50, 60, 70% into it now. They're just selling that on in that last year before handover. If we start seeing it where someone's buying and then selling 6, 12 months in with still a couple of years to go in that, that's speculative activity, trying to make quick money. That's a very dangerous plan with the amount of launches coming and new inventory that's going to be there. It's going to be even more dangerous and something I'd avoid people to really proceed with caution with if that's your objective.
Well, while we are talking about off plan, as you note, we're set to get a number of new master communities. We knew about the two that were coming from EMAR, but you say there's three. What's the third?
So there's three. I'm not jumping the gun too much. They've put some stuff out loosely around it. So you had EMAR do two right near each other, just around the Oasis and DIP. On the same huge plot that EMAR has one of theirs coming in, you have Etihad Rail that cuts through that. On that cut through, the other side of that, DMAC is going to be doing a new launch.
How big do we know?
It is...
By which I mean, do you know?
Yeah, I've got a square footage of my head. I can't remember. I think it's about half the size of what DMAC Lagoons is looking at. I'm doing it visually right now, not with the exact numbers. Don't know the makeup of it yet. It's more than likely going to be mixed between multifamily and single family, so apartment buildings, villas and townhouses. And it's right where that Etihad Rail cuts through there, along that 611 corridor.
So all three of those projects roughly in the same direction. What does that do to the shape of Dubai?
So look, we're looking at urban sprawl, where I'm actually a little surprised with some of it. We knew there was going to be somewhere along 611. I thought the Al-Qudra corridor, so out past Nishama, Cherry Woods and those areas, would be the next to see more happen there. It hasn't. So now we're pushing more towards, the southwest sections of Dubai, towards Abu Dhabi along that 611 corridor. There's some great plots out there. This is where the Arabian Water Canal was going to be originally. So those plots now are being, well, repurposed and different communities coming. I think you're going to see more. We're really tracking land sales. There haven't been any big ones in the last 2 months other than the ones that have been launched, but expect more to come. And then that will eventually swing back around through Dubai South, the backside of that where you've got EMAR South, and probably come right up to where you've got Palm Jebel Ali. So I expect over the next decade, that will be the main area of new Dubai expansion.
One of the things that you note is that the new master communities coming in is going to add more villa and townhouse stock, badly needed at the moment. Is it though? Because the EMAR pair are very high end. Does something at that price point really actually alleviate pressure for the average person buying?
No. Sorry to cut you off, but no. It will add to, there is definitely demand in the segment that they're building for. They are very smart. They've done their research with it. What's needed is more in that mid to upper mid market in the villa and townhouse segment, which we could see in other areas that come around there as well, maybe a little further towards the Abu Dhabi border. But it's very much needed. About 15% of projects that were launched last year and the year before were for that single family market. If you look at the total existing housing stock across Dubai, it's roughly those numbers, maybe a little higher in single family. More is desperately needed, but it's tough to build those communities unless you're an EMAR, a DMAC, a Majid Al Futtaim, those big developers that can take these huge swaths of land and build master communities. So definitely need to see more across different price points. What's coming to market, though, I think will be absorbed and absorbed rather quickly.
20 seconds, FOMC meeting a week from tomorrow. Your report had mortgages down last month.
Yep.
What are you expecting to see and what impact will
no
it
change.
Have?
No change in those target rates. I don't think you'll see changes towards the tail end of the year. But when we do see them, what will happen? So mortgage activity here will still stay high. We've defied everything already. when they change and when we see probably a 75 to 100 basis point drop, you're going to see a big spike in refinance activity. Those people that were at higher rates, they probably had them for a year, year and a half, they will lock in. That will be the magic number, about 75, 100 basis points spike in mortgage activity going forward.
Janja Henke, COO of Property Monitor and Director of Market Intelligence and Research at Cavendish Maxwell. Thank you for your time this morning.
Always a pleasure.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
Well, let's talk currencies now. Crypto, fiat money and all things in between, because joined in the studio by Ronit Ghosh, who's the global head of the Future of Finance think tank within Citigroup. He's joining us in the studio. Morning, Ronit.
Morning.
You got a new book out called Future Money, pulling together the story of how money is changing in the internet era. So let's talk about cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin in particular, hitting a series of record highs in recent days. Advocates, like our regular listener Arno, says this is the future, that fiat currencies are yesterday's thing and cryptocurrencies, in particular Bitcoin, are the future. Central bankers say no, we need a proper, well-managed, well-regulated currency. Discuss.
Sure. Fiat currency is something we've made up as society. Money is something we've made up, and we've made it up because it has a reason for existing. We've had money in some format ever since we've had writing. In fact, the first bit of writing was a debt contract, was money. It wasn't a love letter. It's about 5,000 years old. And we've had fiat currency for give or take 700-800 years. And for the audience, it's worth sort of double-clicking on that. What does fiat mean? Fiat means money that's not backed by assets such as gold or silver. Because most of those 5,000 years of history, money has been linked to either gold, silver, or bronze. There's been a coin or a note linked to the coin. Fiat currencies first emerged late 1200s in China, when the ruler of China at the time, Kublai Khan, decides, I need to print money because I want to go on a war, because most money debt is usually to fund palaces or wars or temples in the old days.
Pleasure domes.
And he says to his treasurer or CFO, I need to go and invade a country. And the treasurer, CFO, goes, we have no money, sir. There's no bronze coins in the treasury. He goes, just print money. This is late 1200s. Didn't last for long. For most of the next several centuries, we went back to money linked to assets. Since the early 1970s, we've had money that's not linked to anything. It's basically the dollar is the credit of the US government, the US state.
So does that mean that Arno, our Bitcoin bull listener, is right, that fiat currencies are becoming increasingly worthless, especially after 15 years of quantitative easing? Yeah. That's why the world needs Bitcoin?
It depends on where you live. I mean, we're obviously doing this in Dubai. Our currency here is linked to the dollar. If you're in the dollar block or the Swiss franc, you've got a pretty strong currency. Yes, it does you do lose value from inflation. Your purchasing power goes down, but it's a relatively stable unit of account and a means of payment. And most importantly, we all agree on what it's worth. But there's like 70, 80% of the world who don't live in strong currency zones. So if you're living in Lebanon or Egypt or Nigeria, or even places like India, you often think in dollars. And the reason you think in dollars or euros is because your home currency isn't particularly strong. So there's a role for Bitcoin, there's a role for cryptocurrencies. I don't think one replaces the other. I think it's a bit like, you know, when you go to a buffet or the mall, you can go to many restaurants. And for me, it's a little bit like that. You know, are you having Indian or Italian?
Well, let me bring in Brandy here now, because Brandy, you have thoughts on money, don't you? And this idea of whether crypto is a currency. We even discuss internally, do we cover cryptocurrencies in the currency section or the commodity section, Brandy? Yeah.
And we've gone commodity purely because we're casting our minds back to Economics 101. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that money needs to have divisible, fine, store of value, no, portable, maybe until the electricity grid goes down, et cetera, et cetera. It probably only ticks about half of them.
Yeah. I would think of it as a spectrum. There's money at one end, which is very liquid. So if you've got a dollar in your pocket, that's super liquid, almost anywhere in the world. If I've got a dirham in my pocket and I leave the UAE, there's not a huge amount I can do if I'm sitting in the UK or the US with it. But obviously it's very strong here. And cryptocurrencies, within cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin's the most liquid, but there are also cryptocurrencies that are very illiquid. So I think of it as a spectrum. So I think it's probably a little bit more on the asset or commodity side than the money side.
But so if we're here in 10 years' time, are we still going to be talking about Bitcoin as a significant player in global financial markets, or will we be laughing and going, I remember that Bitcoin thing, everyone got so excited?
In 10 years, I have no idea. There's a less polite version of that answer, but the polite version is, who knows in 10 years' time?
Well, you wrote a book about it called Future Money.
I have written a book about it, so yeah. You should never forecast the future is an old saying. So what we said in the book is that money is changing. And money is changing in many ways, not just with cryptocurrencies. One of the big chapters in my book is about how does AI change money? And also how does the world of metaverse or extended reality, what does money look like in that world?
We're almost out of time. We'll have another conversation about this in about 6 weeks' time. There's a big cryptocurrency conference in Dubai in April, so we'll get you back in then. But finally, last time you were here, you were talking about the metaverse a couple of years ago, lots of hype. Haven't heard an awful lot about the metaverse, but you say the metaverse might be making a bit of a comeback, and you've got the merch to prove it.
I have.
If you're watching on TV, you can see that Rohit is now putting on a pair of spectacles. What are they?
These are the Meta Wayfarers. These are the Ray-Ban Wayfarers I'm wearing. This is version one. This allows me to talk. It allows me to listen to music, communicate. Version two will have a much better AI. This is very early. So what we're going to is, I think, a world of mixed reality or extended reality. Are kids already in that world? We're just going to join them in that world?
Well, you walk around DIFC wearing those, having conversations, and people think you're weird.
They think I'm weird anyway, but that's another story.
Rohit, what a way to leave it. It's great talking to you. Appreciate it. Best of luck with the book. Future Money is out now. Rohit Ghosh is the global head of the Future of Finance think tank within Citigroup. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
Well, we're heading down, virtually at least, to the Gold Souk.
Yeah, that's because we have seen and monitored these reports of record gold prices here in Dubai. We have seen those being going up in recent times, a gradual rise, if you like. But the other higher prices reached by gold are, by all accounts, turning Dubai's traditional bazaar, the Gold Souk and others, into more of a window shopping experience. Surely not in the city of gold. Listen, this has once been reported by Bloomberg. It's been picked up by other news sources the world over. Is that the case? Well, let's get down to the shop face, the shop floor, as it were, at the moment to find out more. Absolute pleasure to be joined live on the line by the Managing Director of Saroya Jewellers and Vice Chair of the Dubai Gold and Jewellery Group, Chandu Saroya, joining us live on Microsoft Teams this morning. Good morning to you, Chandu.
Hi, good morning.
Is this the case? Are buyers in Dubai being deterred?
Well, you see, Dubai serves a dual purpose. One is it is a major retailing center and a wholesaling center both. At the retail level, yes, we are a little affected because customers would like to wait and watch. We have seen the highest price of gold ever in history, which was at $2,195.15 last week. And people tend to wait and watch where is it going to lead. Indications are that it will go beyond 2,300 this time, and it is a sustainable rise because it is not just sudden. It has been gradual. Then again, there's been a plateau. Then again, a gradual rise. So this time it is here to stay. This is what we all believe, and the so-called experts also believe. We are seeing a little lull in the market, not only because of the gold price, but because of the weather. We have had some terrific, I would say, lovely weather in international terms. But for us, there's been severe flooding also in some areas. So that has deterred the customers from coming into the souk. And also the beginning of Ramadan is generally very slow. We had yesterday was the first day of Ramadan. But at the wholesale level, no, that is not true. We still see a lot of customers who have already traveled from across the world to source their products from Dubai, which is genuinely the jewelry destination of the world. And we see a good demand at the wholesale level. At the retail level, I do believe that we might see a little bit of a lull for the next few days because people will want to ascertain that this is the new bottom, and then they will start buying again.
The articles that the aforementioned articles that I mentioned a little bit earlier on, suggesting that there is a big difference between locals or residents here in the UAE or the GCC, and then tourists coming as well. Tourist season being something being seen as something that we'll see a spike in the interest as well. Are the tourists being deterred as much as the residents?
You see, when a tourist comes to Dubai, gold is on their do-buy list, definitely. And where else, this is the best place in the world to buy jewelry. It is, they've got the best designs, they're the world's best prices. Mm. So they do come to the gold souk. They may not come to the gold souk, but right now, you see, for the benefit of the tourist, we have got gold shops and jewelry shops all across Dubai. So they can visit their nearest shop, but definitely they are buying some gold or the other because we get better designs and it is the best price in the world. And yes, the locals, the residents, they can definitely defer it to the next day or the third day because of the rains and the waterlogging. But the tourists don't have a choice, so they do find their way into the gold souks.
What about the predictions and looking ahead as well? A lot of people telling, suggesting that, even analysts out there suggesting that the rise in gold prices has taken them a little bit by surprise as well. I mean, what's your sort of house view at the moment, Chenu, in terms of where this price is going to go?
You see, we've been talking about new highs for quite some time now. And we have seen that there is a lot of central bank buying. I believe it has been the highest in history in the last 2 years. And there is indications saying that central banks are going to continue buying more gold. The loss of a little confidence in the dollar, and all these are very positive for gold. So I do see gold at new highs again.
Interesting to get your thoughts on this one, because obviously not just a great voice person for the industry as a whole, but also vice chairman of the Dubai Gold and Jewellery Group. Talk to me about the investment into the gold and jewellery market here at the moment. Whenever we introduce you, Chandu, or we introduce a story like this, we talk about going back down to the traditional gold souk, etc. And yet, in recent years, the traditional gold souk has expanded to other parts of the city. Is that part of the sort of focus to attract more tourists to the region?
Oh, yes. You see, in the olden days, the gold souk was just as one small lane with a covered market, wood-covered market. And today, if you go, it's a bustling market. And the new, and then we call it the Bairagar Souk enhancement, that has added a lot of facilities. There are for tourists and for visitors alike. We have got parking, which is very easily available, which was a major concern. We have got very clean roads, very vibrant atmosphere. Vibes are superb. And there are coffee shops, there are restaurants, there are toilet facilities, everything is there. And I think it's a wonderful experience. So whoever has not visited Deira for a long time, I would urge them, please come and you're in for a surprise. You will see something which was not, which is like any other shopping mall in the city. So we have a shopping mall on the road.
Big focus for us on gold prices at the moment. You represent the Dubai Gold and Jewellery Group. Do high gold prices have a negative impact on the sales of jewels and precious other precious stones?
Yes, when the price jumps all of a sudden, like for example, in the last 1 week, the price has jumped by almost 8 dirhams per gram in terms of pure gold. People who don't want to make an urgent purchase would like to postpone it for a few days. But then when they see that the gold price is consistent and it is not going up and down much, they do come and buy. But I would like to say that any person, they should invest in gold because it's the best hedge against any uncertainty. This is the most liquid asset in the world, and you could buy gold in various forms. You could buy it in the form of a bar or a coin or a medallion or even paper gold. But the best way is to buy it in jewelry because that makes your better half much more happier than you are.
Chandu, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much indeed for the late call this morning. Chandu Saroya is the Managing Director of Saroya Jewellers and Vice Chairman of Dubai Gold and Jewellery Group. Suggestions that buyers are being deterred, but Chandu certainly showing a very optimistic front there.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.